a laugh, there's a helping people. But Dumbass talking to these funny people. He's asking what they find and they're telling stories. Can somebody yell out the name of the show, please? It's my mate, Water Toaster. Oh, oh. It's my mate, Water Toaster. Yeah, yeah, it's my mate, Water Toaster.
Well, hello and welcome along to the best of My Mate Bought a Toaster Series 8. If you have never dropped by before, here's the plan. Here's how it works. I play out a load of clips of me going through people's Amazon purchase history in order to tell their life story. Really? I know what you're thinking. Isn't that a bit dull? Isn't it boring? Doesn't it get a bit samey? Well, surprisingly, and trust me, I'm as surprised as you, no. It's not every day, for example, that you get to talk to Stephen Merchant about why he bought a karaoke machine. 30th of November 2012 now, Steve. You bought the X Factor portable karaoke machine because if there's one thing about karaoke that I don't like, it feels very anchored to a room. But you've gone portable. You spent £85. You can take that absolutely anywhere. And that is... It's a microphone attached to a speaker. That's what it is. That's speaker's corner. It's singer's corner.
Again, I wish, without wishing to... This feels a little bit like what we were just saying. This is a Fallon situation where you've brought up the karaoke machine, hoping that I'll tell you now about my passion for karaoke.
So when you bumped into Adele. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, truth is, I can't bear karaoke. And that was a gift for someone else because I detest karaoke for several reasons. Mm. One, like we were just saying, I admire people that put work in and are good at something.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's singers, comedians, whatever.
Yes.
And I don't want to see me or anyone else who is a sort of rank amateur with a bad or middling singing voice ruining Living on a Prayer. I would rather see, I'd rather watch an old John Bon Jovi YouTube clip than hear you doing your shitty version of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so either you've got just mediocre people and then one person who's normally the person who suggested we do karaoke because they're really good. And it's not enjoyable to me. I want performances to be good. I would rather pay money and go and see a concert with a great talent. I don't want to see you doing your shitty version of a song.
I think the unsaid truth about karaoke is the worst thing about it is being the person in the booth who's not singing. What am I meant to do? Well, hey, do I dance? It's like being stuck in a lift with someone auditioning for the X Factor.
How many times have you been in a pub? There's a karaoke. There's someone up there singing, and all that anyone else is doing is just looking through the booklet
to decide
their song.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one's paying any attention. And it's just, I find it insufferable.
I'm sorry
if you're a karaoke fan or if you're running a karaoke boutique.
Listen,
but it's not my thing.
You're allowed to not have your things. And, you know, there are other things that you can have. There are other passions you can have. Steve, 29th of November 2012, you spent £190 on the Allergy Solution HEPA 55281 bagged cylinder vacuum cleaner. It's a lovely Hoover. Really, really nice.
Let me tell you what happened there, mate. I discovered I was allergic to my flat.
No.
Couldn't figure out what the problem was, but I did a lot in the next couple of years to try and not... just have eyes streaming, sneezing every time I entered my flat.
Were you living inside a cat? What do you mean? What was it?
Well, that's what it felt like. Honestly, it was brutal. I mean, I'd go away on holiday, I'd come back, and within an hour, I'd be sneezing, my eyes would be streaming.
It's dust.
I had allergy people came by. Well, this is why I had these Hoovers and things. They were spotlessly cleaned, the whole house. I had allergy people come round. To do tests on whether there was too much dust.
Allergy exorcists,
they couldn't find anything. And at one point I thought, well, maybe it's me, maybe I'm the problem. I said to someone, do you got any ideas for any tips on allergy specialists? And they gave me a number and I went to this guy and it was a Harley Street, what I can only describe as a Harley Street quack.
Okay.
And I was so furious and I got there and I thought, hang on a minute, this is not a proper clinic. Because he had... like in a sort of attic room, and he had these little sort of jars of things, and each of them would say things like apple, dust, cats, cheese. But the thing was, this was a mistake. He said to me, so I understand you've got allergy problems. I said, yes, I have. He went, do you know what allergies, you know, what kind of allergies? I said, well, I think maybe dust. He went, interesting. And then when he got out his dust jar,
yeah.
Of course, true enough, that was the one that suddenly informed him that I was allergic to dust. I think I had to hold it or sniff it or something. And he went, oh yeah, dust is a problem. And I just wish I hadn't told him that dust was the issue. I wish I'd said, well, you tell me. But I remember at one point he was doing some kind of bullshit test on me that I knew was crap.
Yeah.
And I remember looking out of his window like Bruce Forsyth on The Generation Game into his own camera and kind of rolling my eyes as if to say, if anyone's watching this, I know this guy's a lying piece of shit and I'm not falling for it, but I'm here now and I'm just trying to be polite. I was so furious with him.
You were playing to an imaginary camera just in case.
Yeah, but anyway, it subsequently turned out it was the mattress.
The mattress.
The mattress was the issue. And once I finally got rid of that mattress and changed it, I was off to the races. Life was never the same again.
You got to spend big on a mattress. Was it an old mattress?
I'll tell you what it was. I think it was one of those, it was like a knockoff version of one of those Tempur-Pedics. It wasn't the Tempur-Pedic, it was a knockoff version. And I think it basically had started to disintegrate.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you're a self-employed writer. You spend a lot of time in bed. That is what it is.
A lot of time in bed.
It's overuse. You
know, that bed saw a lot of action in 2012. And had to get rid of it.
God, what a moment, though. What a moment to work out what that is. That's a proper sort of Knives Out mystery.
Yeah.
That is the sort of mystery thriller I'd like. Like House, like Hugh Laurie's in House. Just trying to work it out, but a slightly mundane end. I'd enjoy that.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's just a word of advice for anyone who perhaps has similar issues.
Yeah.
And they can't identify the source. Just think about your mattress, guys.
Or there's a great doctor called...
There's a great guy in Harley Street.
Yeah, Dr. Donald Duck, I believe his name is.
Exactly.
28th of November 2012, you spent £9.63 on a British Airways Boeing 747 toy. You weren't doing that well. You weren't making Hollywood money yet, but you did buy a plane. But it was a toy.
I bought a toy plane. But you know what that was? That was a little gift to give to my parents. Because at the time, I was doing quite a lot of work in the US.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to fly them out. And so they, because I don't think they'd been to Los Angeles. And I thought that, you know, my dad was a big movie lover, is a big movie fan. And uh-huh. I think that idea of coming to see the Hollywood sign and the whole thing.
Oh, yes.
Always very exciting. And so I flew them out. And I'm pretty sure I flew them business. Because I remember, and I sort of gave this to them as a little gift to say, look, you know, when you're ready, come out, I'll pay for it, come out to the States.
Yeah.
And but I remember they went business and they, not first, I've not made the money.
Yeah, of course.
And they landed, they arrived at the flat I was in or the house I was in. And my mother said, oh, it was good. It was good. Business class was good. We got to leave the plane before the ordinary people.
Oh, how quickly.
And I just thought, how quick people change. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
God,
she never looked back.
The class system is just dormant in all of us, isn't it? Waiting.
Just waiting. Yeah. There's a woman who, you know, my father was a plumber and a builder.
Yeah.
She was one of the ordinary people, but no longer.
You should have sent her back in economy.
Teach her a lesson.
That must have been a lovely moment. Yeah. That must have been amazing to take your parents out. Look at me now. Because by this point, right, has the office been bought in America and you're doing movies? Like the merchant has gone big here, right? Not just 6'7" big, but
yes, I think maybe I was even doing the Hello Ladies TV show.
Yes.
And so yeah, it was just a fun thing to be able to do. And I think we did some of the studio tours, you know, and but then they came to some set. We had probably some film sets and they came to that or whatever it was. It was just nice to be able to share that stuff. And I think again, because a lot of my love for comedy, film, entertainment is through watching it with my dad, you know, and that when other people were out kicking a ball around, whatever it was, no, me and my dad just sat with the curtains drawn on a summer's day watching an old Lauren Hardy film.
That's beautiful.
So it was quite nice to be able to go out and sort of see the sights and, you know, experience a bit of that.
Look what's beyond the curtains, Dad. Look what I've done, Dad. Did you get a moment? I always wonder how I'd feel about this. If my mum ever says she's proud of me, I don't know what to say. She says it every now and again. I feel it's crushingly awkward. But did you get a moment with your mum and dad by the Hollywood sign saying, well done, son? Was there a little kind of like, or did they play it even cooler and just it doesn't need to be said?
I don't know if it was that particular moment, but I do think that they've definitely said it over the years. Yeah. And I've always appreciated that. But they're not withholding of praise and the way that I know some parents are.
Yeah.
You know, I know that some people are very driven because they're their father has never given them a pat on the back and said, good job, son.
Yes.
But my parents have always been encouraging and supportive in that way.
Yeah,
they've just always been very cautious about things like pension plans.
Oh, lovely.
You know, so when I said I'm leaving the BBC to write this show called The Office, they went, okay, well, the thing is, if you stick with the BBC, you will have a pension. You could get a pension. You sure? You know, so there was always the concern was just something, have something to fall back on.
Always, always. That's lovely to hear that they're happy to give out the proud thing. Could I give you your mum and dad my email? Is that okay? There's a few other comics as well. You could offer that as a service. Do you know what I mean?
That's right.
Well done, son. You'd make a fortune. Ooh, my big boy, Stephen Merchant bought a tiny toy plane for his parents. You'll always know that now, all thanks to My Mate Bought a Toaster. But I know what you're thinking. Catherine Ryan, has she ever compared a wedding back home in Canada and really stunk the room out? Let's answer that question.
All right, Catherine, let's move into 2012 now. No orders placed in 2012. Tough times.
I told you.
Yeah.
I was busy having the affair. By then,
Bailey.
I think I was out and onto my next, terrible relationship.
Was stand-up helpful at this point? Because you could just take it, you could throw it, you could vomit it on the stage.
Stand-up was a wonderful outlet. I started to get successful. So in May 2012, I first appeared on 8 out of 10 Cats.
Yes.
And I became solvent after that.
Okay, that was the moment.
And I started to have more confidence and slowly my decisions got better and
The thing that I was struck about you watching you do open spots back in 2010, before even, what year did you come over?
2008.
Was how fearless you were.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just impossible with stand-up. I'm doing open spots now, trying to work new material out. I'm terrified. I've always found that incredible, that you just don't seem to have the fear.
Well, I think when I came over here, I was very anonymous.
And that's quite useful.
That's so useful.
Mm.
Off mic, when I first came in, I told you a bit of gossip about my hometown.
Mm.
Everyone's famous in a small town or in a suburb.
Yes.
And when you escape that and you move not only to a big city, but to a different continent.
Yes.
You're super anonymous. I had nothing to lose. It's really fun to have nothing to lose.
So going back now, so if you went back to your hometown.
Yeah.
So it's the example from my life. I recently had to go back to my hometown and do a speech at a funeral, very close friend. It was really sad. And I was so nervous.
Yeah.
Doing stand-up, it's fine because it's here, anonymity kicks in and I've got good jokes. If it's old stuff, it's fine. It's easy peasy, do the jokes. Going back home and being that, oh, he's the one who went off and did the thing. This will be good. Absolute hell.
I crashed and burned doing that already. I was in Los Angeles promoting my first or second Netflix special. And by then, I got the idea that, oh, I understand the brief. This is what's expected of me. Every time I open my mouth, I'm supposed to be funny, a little bit provocative. Mm. And that's what people are looking up for. And I was invited home directly from L.A., to be the compere at my best friend's wedding. And I think she's not fully forgiven me. And this was 5 years ago. I came straight from Conan O'Brien, James Corden show, promoting my Netflix special, doing all these things, to comparing her wedding. And it was populated by small town elderly relatives.
Who all remembered you from back in the day.
Who all remembered me from back in the day and were told, but absolutely had no context of, she's a comedian. So they were like, what does this mean? And I went in like a best man speech and I talked about all the debauchery that my best friend and I got up to. And the whole conceit was, oh, you know, I'm supposed to embarrass her with stories of that time we went to Montreal and met these guys. But who cares? Because we're 34.
Yeah.
And what about when we did? But it doesn't matter because we're 34 and it's not. And it really definitely still mattered. And her father was do you remember when your parents went away? And we it mattered a lot to all of these elderly people. What we'd gone up to.
And did you feel a cringe thing that you otherwise don't normally feel?
Oh
did you
gosh.
Feel it?
I felt it and it was deafening silence. People were horrified. My dad left.
I love it.
So bad. And they told me right before I went out and they were definitely don't swear. I was don't swear. And it was probably, I think I actually changed the vibe of the whole wedding. It was that bad.
Were they Mormons or something? Why was it so sort of uptight?
It was more uptight than I was. Oh. I could ever have anticipated. I think there are family members of hers who still dislike me after that.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I don't even understand how it went so bad.
But that tells you something really important about stand-up comedians and entertainers generally and how we work. I don't see any of this as real. It's fun. This is nice. It's okay. The real stuff is the fame of being back in your small town or back where you're from. Mm-hmm. That's when you feel vulnerable. Everywhere else, I'm it's fine.
Yeah. And I think with a comedy audience, you expect that they buy into,
yeah,
we're here to laugh at something. Yeah. Whereas this was a complete miscommunication. They wanted sincere, earnest, crying,
yeah,
speeches only.
I think that's actually more accurate with thinking about it. When I'm doing gigs and stuff, this is actually me. This is the real me. And so what can I do? I can only be my real self, right? Whereas when I'm back in those situations, back at home or doing the speech or whatever, I'm playing to a version of me that I think other people expect. And that is a disaster. This is not going to end well.
Well, why do we do it? We should just say I'm unavailable.
We'll charge a fee.
I'm not speaking at home ever again.
You know, it's dead. Look, 25th of April 2013, some blue Doc Martens, £60 on some beautiful blue lace-up boots. Oh.
I wore those on stage a lot. Before I found fashion on stage, yeah. I knew that I needed to be colorful.
Yeah.
But I still dressed. I wore colorful leggings, colorful boots, and a black t-shirt. That was my comedy uniform.
Yes. And then you started looking magnificent on stage.
I sure did.
What was that moment when these Catherine Ryan decisions happen and you go, right, and I know they expect me to be funny. They now expect me to look X. Why did you make that decision?
Well, I started playing bigger venues and more elevated gigs. And I decided very early on that it would be polite to be the best dressed person in the room because everyone else is paying for parking. They got a babysitter. They had dinner. People were starting to come to see me on purpose.
Oh.
And I just thought it was rude to be in Doc Martens. And also, female comics, we talk about this all the time, is we were told for a while, or the narrative was like, don't be too feminine and it'll be distracting and the women will hate you and the men will fancy you, or no one will take your jokes seriously. No one will listen to you. So you see the women, and I actually, and this is very, very conceited of me, but I'll tell you exclusively, Tom, I am the reason why all the female comics dress up now in this country. Have you noticed?
Yeah.
That was me.
Yeah.
I know that it was me. Well, it wasn't me. It was my stylist, Jennifer Mahalski Bray.
Yeah, because before that,
yep,
female comics went to do what was seen as a man's game.
Yeah.
So they had to dress how a man would expect them to dress.
Yeah.
And fit in with a man's vibe of things. And then you started doing that, and it was this celebratory, this is femininity. This is what we look like. This is how I want to be. This is women peacocking. Forget men peacocking.
Yeah.
Women can now peacock.
I'll extend it too. I'm responsible for Joel Dommett's outfits on The Masked Singer. That was me too. No, I really think Jen, my stylist.
Yeah.
And I don't think that I throw my influence around. I wouldn't be like, I changed the game. I changed comedy. I certainly changed the aesthetic of women doing comedy. I take all the credit for that. Because I see them wearing things I've worn and using the photographers I've used and doing it. Yeah. And I'm like, good. And then they develop their own look.
Yeah.
But everybody really looks nice now.
You gave them permission.
You're welcome.
You were the permission laugh. Every good stand-up gig, you need the permission laugh.
Yeah.
That person's laughing, everyone else is going to follow you.
Yeah.
If there's no gateway laugher,
mm-hmm,
you were the gateway dress.
I really think so. Do you think so?
Yes, of course.
I'm not out of line saying that.
No, this isn't an opinion.
Okay.
This is facts.
Good.
On another show, we'll go through pictures of stand-up comedians and I'll show you the point. And it's completely true.
And I don't mean it in a nasty way. They're not only allowed, encouraged. I'm glad that we all dress this way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when I'm dead, it needs to be credited to, and then Catherine Ryan wore high heels, and everybody else was in a dress.
Do you want us to put that on your Wikipedia?
Yeah.
Okay.
You are listening and, fingers crossed, enjoying the best of My Mate Bought a Toaster Series 8. If you are enjoying it, please give us a nice review. Whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, on Amazon Podcasts, on Spotify, it makes a massive difference, especially Spotify, in fact, because it's got its own little reviewing system. So if you do listen on Spotify and you get a couple of stars on there, 5 stars, genuinely drives lots of new listeners to our lovely show. So thank you in advance. What's the show all about? Well, let me tell you, it's about asking a man why he bought romper suits and finding out he broke his leg on national television. Here's Marcus Brigstock.
Elsewhere, you've bought all-in-one romper suits for adults, blue and pink.
Okay.
Lovely romper suit. Is it December 2012?
Can I see those?
Yeah, there you go, look. Yeah. I mean, I don't have them in.
Okay. You know, yeah, good.
I love a romper suit. There was a bit of a romper suit vibe at one stage, wasn't there? There was a bit of
I've got a lot of one-piece things. I've got one. Yeah, I have. I was given a really good one. I was on The Jump, the Channel 4 show.
Son's injury?
No, broke my leg.
Are you joking?
No, broke my leg in the final. I was the last one standing from, and I do mean standing, from the original lineup in that show. Flash Gordon broke his shoulder before we'd even gone to air. And was hospitalized. Hospitalized throughout the production period in Austria. And I tell you, this was such a golden moment. I had a mate in the car.
Yeah.
All right. So Sam Jones, who played Flash Gordon,
yeah,
now does private security in Mexico. If you're in Mexico, you can book Flash Gordon to make sure you're okay.
Oh my.
That's
days.
His job.
And you do. Certain parts of Mexico really need that.
100%. Mm-hmm. So I was in the car with a friend. My phone went and I clicked the thing and I went, hello. And it was a foreign number, which I always answer in case they're interesting, right? I was like, hello. And this voice went, Marcus, it's Sam. And I was like, sorry, this you're calling from overseas. I'm not sure who this is. He went, it's Flash, man. Flash Gordon.
Oh, wow.
And my friend was like, what the hell is this? I went, Sam, how are you? And yeah, it was ringing about a thing. It was a moment of pure joy. Anyway, to come back to The Jump.
The Jump is one of the most ill-conceived TV shows of all time, simply in terms of health and safety.
Hand in the air for truth, right? What is that? I never put my hand in the air for truth. But my point is, I'm telling you the truth, is my leg still hurts and we're 10 years on. If they did another series of The Jump, I'd do it again.
Why?
Because I was trained badly to do stuff that I've loved since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I did the skeleton bobsled. My chin that far off the ice, 70 miles an hour,
my life.
Face first down the track. It was unbelievable.
Where does your brain go when you're doing that?
I went off a ski jump.
But where does your brain go? Does your brain disappear? Or like?
No, mine goes to... So I don't drink and I don't take drugs, right?
Right.
So I've been sober for all my adult life. Mm-hmm. And there is definitely a part of me that's like, that looks like it might be a have a buzz in it, you know? Stand-up being a big part
of
that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
There's the whole... For a lot of people, the notion of getting up on stage and declaring, I will now be funny for a set period of time, mm-hmm, and everyone will like what I do,
yep,
is as terrifying as going headfirst down a skeleton bobsled track. So I have, yeah, I have that. I loved it, man. I loved it. I mean, I didn't love hurting myself.
How did you do the leg break? What happened? Was that on the
ski
jump?
No, well, yes and no. Something happened and I'm unclear what, but my leg hurt a lot the day of the final.
Right.
And I was like, oh, no. But it was working. It kind of worked. And the final race was between three of us. And the other two were subs who'd had to be brought in because no one else was still okay. And it was a ski cross race, right? So you're going round bank turns and over jumps.
Yeah.
Like quite big jumps. And the final kicker on that jump to bring you down to the finish line,
yeah,
was over 6 foot high.
Oh, my God.
And with a fall away on the... On the landing.
I just know.
So,
no.
The idea is you go tall, and when you hit the jump, you crush it, you kind of suck it up and try and go long and flat so you're not gaining too much height.
But that's that core strength as well you need and the compression.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to hold yourself in the air in a small place and then unfold as you hit the ground. So, my knee, right, I did the compression as I came off the jump and the release is what broke my knee.
Yes, of course.
So the ACL snapped,
not
on the landing, but on the release. So I was then in the air with one leg just hanging down because it wouldn't work anymore. and then I started rotating in the air because the other knee was up and I thought, right, now I have to put the other leg down. So I'm now coming through the air like a panicky starfish. I had enough time up there to plan what I was going to do with the rest of the summer. Genuinely, I was in there because I'd come off the jump because I only could. I'd come off it wrong and I was just
in
the air.
I could catch up on my reading.
I was up there for ages, yeah.
I'm going to watch those I'll get the wire right, I'll get that done.
I mean, I'm in the air and this already hurts. I imagine when the ground, which is now rushing up towards me, impacts against me, I imagine that'll hurt for a while. So there's that.
Oh my Lord.
It's incredible.
I just can't. I mean, you know, it's one thing to do I'm a celebrity. You just get hungry when you do that and you eat maggots. That's
sustained bodily pain that you're now
in. Yeah, it's bad. But I was the only person out of everyone who was on series one of The Jump who had written into his contract that I wanted to keep the stuff. So no one else had. And as I was being carted away in the ambulance, I was genuinely yelling to the production staff, I want those skis, they're mine, that helmet, right? That's my, the gloves, I want the racing gloves. Yeah, they're mine, the body armour. The body up. Right, I'm still wearing that because I can't take it off because of my injury.
The thing about The Jump was that it encouraged you to go and race. When you're doing downhill stuff, right?
Yeah.
There's a gravity thing that kicks in. If I'm racing on flat ground, I can control how fast I'm going to go. And there's a point where I go, I'm now out of control. I can slow down or something.
Yeah.
If you're going downhill, gravity is now...
Yeah.
There's, do you know what I mean? There's like a set number that gravity's going to do to you.
Yes.
And you just have to ride that.
That's correct.
And you can't withdraw from that.
No, you can't. Isn't that exciting?
No, it's awful.
I loved it. I really loved it. It was such a buzz. What's the budget history of this jokester? Stay tuned for my mate
bought a toaster. Hello, welcome back to the Best of My Mate Bought a Toaster Series 8. Still to come, a moment from the series which I'm never going to forget was talking to Emmanuel Sanubi about why he bought some weighing scales. An apparently random and not particularly interesting object that he got on Amazon, which revealed a huge story about how he very, very nearly died. It's an amazing story, and it's one we'll get to in a little while. Also, Paul Foote, I'm going to be playing out a bit of his episode. He's going to be chatting about his four favourite places to have a nap. It's a very, very surprisingly compelling listen. But first of all, comedian superstar Josh Widdicombe has done Celebrity Mastermind. Of course he has. What's it like to do that show? Let's find out. Here's a big part of your life. 2013, 3,862 days, the official history of Blur. The life of Blur.
I'd already Martin read Power. That by... That's by Stuart McConey. So I read that when it came out, which was in 1999 or 2000.
Yeah. You're a big Blur fan?
Yeah, huge. Mm-hmm. Those two books, I've bought them at the same time because I was doing Blur on Celebrity Mastermind.
Oh, nice. And how did you get on?
Because this is a sign of that single-minded thing we were talking about. I read both books. I underlined everything that I thought was a fact. And then I created fact sheets and learnt every fact possible so that...
That's more effort than an Edinburgh show.
Certainly one of mine. I got 11 out of 13 for Blur.
Yeah, very good.
And then I won on the general knowledge, which obviously...
So you won the whole mastermind thing?
Well, it was a celebrity mastermind.
Doesn't matter. Some celebrities are clever.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Fair enough.
People are competitive. We've had this before on this show. People have talked about mastermind and being... People are quite competitive about it. Yeah. Because to be in this business, I guess, you get very single-minded and competitive. And, you know.
Do you know the worst bit? It's almost not doing your bit, because obviously you're there.
Mm.
You know how a football manager will say it's easier being a player because you don't have to watch?
Yes.
Watching the other people go up, and let's be honest, every right answer is a dagger to your heart.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. The lack of control as they're getting answers right.
They should mic you up for that. I'd want to hear.
Shit!
That would be just delicious. And but of course, you have to do the awards ceremony failure face.
You're in the dark, luckily, at that point, aren't you? Because they're spotlit.
But I think that'd be funnier just to hear the noise coming from the dark. Fucking hell! Sorry. That's Josh Widdicombe there. All right, look, 2014, you've bought a Flymo Turbo Light Electric Hover Lawnmower.
Yeah, bought a house in... East London, I don't live in it anymore.
Okay.
I'd say our lawn wasn't as big as this, definitely wasn't as big as this room.
Okay, well under an acre, listeners.
It was a tiny lawn, and I'd say, I don't know why I bought such a big, but then, is there such a thing as a small mower?
You can get tiny mowers, this is quite a small one, the little Flymo, but that must be quite sort of... dispiriting, because it's quite a sort of...
That lawn was the bane of my life.
Yeah.
Because it was great when we bought the house.
Yeah.
A lawn is so much effort.
It's another child. Dad spent more time with our lawns than he did with me, no doubt.
All you can see is the problems with it. It's like...
Molehills.
Yeah.
Patches.
weeds.
Yeah.
Just fucking horrible.
And this is such a small space. To mow it would take you 10, 5. We're talking, done it.
Yeah.
It's like buying a razor when you're about 12, 13. Yeah. You don't quite need it, yeah.
No, exactly.
But there's something quite, you know, are you a domestic kind of guy? These rituals, these things of being homely.
I like being at home.
Yeah.
I wouldn't leave the house if I had the option.
I always think of Bob Mortimer talking about this. Saying, I just want my pork pie on my TV.
That happened during COVID, though, for me.
Oh, yeah.
I had worked every evening for 12 years.
Yeah.
And then exactly. I've learned what it was like to have your evenings back.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Like, what the fuck am I doing with my life?
It's unbelievable. I mean, I haven't been regularly on the circuit for the best part of probably 7-8 years now. And every weekday evening, I still go, oh, I haven't got to do a gig tonight.
Yeah.
Every weekday evening. Tonight, I haven't got to do a gig, and I'm so happy.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
It's weird, and yeah, I love it. And when I'm doing it, I love it.
And I'm working up a tour, and I enjoy the tour.
Yes.
But it's about finding that balance now.
Mm.
I won't be Ken Dodd.
Oh my God.
He's
dead and he's still gigging. That's how hard Ken Dodd gigs. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. @ToasterPod is the name we're trying to jam. It's simple like a sonny filled with cheese and ham. @ToasterPod, I swear it's not a scam, I think. I love Josh Widdicombe's laugh so much. I also love Paul Foot's nap patterns. Hugely. The thing about the Paul Foot episode, and by the way, there's over 120 episodes that you can listen to on our back catalogue. Go and listen to them now. There's Adam Buxton, Tim Key, Mel Gaudreuch, literally loads of fabulous episodes waiting for you right now. Andy Peters, what an episode that is. Paul Foot is genuinely one of my favourites because he was the first guest I had on who had bought precisely one item ever on Amazon, which meant conversation went somewhat astray.
And I've got 4 locations for sleeps in my house.
Okay,
and I can use any of them.
Let me guess them. We've got the sofa.
Sofa.
We've got your bedroom.
My bedroom.
Now I'm struggling, but don't tell me.
The third one's obvious.
The porch. No, sorry, just you mentioned you cleaned it.
Having said what you just said.
The bath.
You just said, well, the bath, I suppose, is a fifth one.
Yes.
Could be.
But dangerous. Don't nap in the bath, especially when you live by yourself and your cleaner only comes once a month.
But you just said what option number 2 was.
Yeah. The bed.
Yeah, so option number 3 is obvious from what you just said.
The spare bed.
Spare bed.
And
sometimes it's like, oh, it's like going for a little holiday in the spare bedroom.
Oh, I love that. It's your own little personal premier inn.
Yeah, I haven't been in there for ages.
Treat yourself. Because, have a little staycation.
Because it's all clean, so I'm leaving it clean for when my next guest comes. Mm. But when my next guest comes, let's say they're just there for a couple of days, I won't bother washing the sheets after they've left and I'll just get in. And that's my little place to go for a little lie down.
I grade my guests by whether or not we need to clean the sheets after they've been there for a night. And I'm not going to name any names, but there'll be some people who stay and I'll think, it's fine. Because the spare room in our house is for, you know, kids waking up or whatever, and we just need to, one of us is ill, we go in the spare room. And there's certain people, family mostly, in fact, all our family, it's fine. If they're there for 1 or 2 nights, I'm not going to clean the sheets.
Yes.
But then you do get certain friends where you think, I am going to clean this before I get back in there.
I was staying with a friend recently, and then I was just there one night and slept in this bed. And then afterwards I said, oh, shall I strip the sheets and all this stuff? Oh, don't worry about that. She said, I'll do that later, blah, blah, blah.
Do you think she was...
And then I realised, because I came back, but I wasn't staying that next night, that she was just good, you know, she wasn't bothered. I just slept in it for one night.
And did you think, she loves me?
Yeah, and I was all clean. I'd had a bath before getting in. I was all clean and that. And she was just like, she couldn't be bothered to change 4 pillowcases, one massive duvet thing, and I don't know how my cleaner does it. I never do I don't know how you do a double duvet. I couldn't do it on my own.
So,
she does it on her own.
I can tell you. Do you want me to tell you?
No, I don't want to know. No,
I'm so tempted to force the information onto you.
No, I don't want to learn. I know that that's what she does, the cleaner.
Okay, so we've
got... fourth location.
Hang on, but yes, so we've got the fourth location. So the bath maybe is a fifth. The fourth location, so we've done... Well, now I'm struggling because we've done sofa. We've done the 2 bedrooms. Ness is another spare bedroom.
Play 20 questions.
Okay. Is it indoors?
Yes.
Is it on the ground floor?
No.
Okay. Oh, is it in your... Is there some sort of study situation?
No.
And it's not the bath?
No.
Okay, that's the question. I can't think what other rooms you would have, and it's not another spare room, and it's not, oh, hang on, is it in your bedroom, but somewhere else in your bedroom?
No.
It's not going to be in the hallway?
No.
How many questions have I got left?
Another 14 questions.
14 more questions?
Well, I'm 50, because I'll scrub one out about the bath, because I was just, because you knew it wasn't that.
This is my favourite ever episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster. 15 left, okay. I'm just picturing your house.
It's not
A cupboard. Like Dracula. No,
it's not that complicated. You're being far too...
Well, how would you mean?
Complicated about it. Think of someone's house.
Yeah, I've got spare room, bedroom, bathroom. That's all we've got upstairs. Is there another room I'm missing? I've said study.
Yes, you're missing another room, and it's very obvious. But you need to think laterally. You're thinking the wrong way. You're getting too complicated. It's much simpler than you think.
I am so stuck. It's not the hallway. That doesn't count as a question because I'm just talking to myself now.
It's not on the ground floor. We know that.
Is it on the top floor?
Yes.
Ah. Hang on. What? How many floors have you got in your house? Two or three?
Three.
Three. Okay, loft.
Well, I don't call it the loft anymore because I call it the penthouse.
Oh, lovely.
Because, you know, it's not a loft anymore. It used to be a loft.
Okay.
It had all horrible rats going around it, scratching away, and all disgusting stuff all over the place. It was a horrible room. But now it's a lovely place.
And is that where you sleep?
That's one of the, you know, that's like, it's like a creative fantasy room that I've created. It's got like an octopus mural.
No.
With 9 octopuses all holding tentacles with each other.
Oh, wow.
And a safari mural that my decorator, who's also an artist, did.
Oh, wow.
And it's also got, like it's got various things like desk for writing.
Yes.
I've got 3 desks in my house.
Have you?
Because I am, after all, a writer.
Yeah, of course, prolific.
And it's got chairs for sitting and relaxing. It's got meditation cushions.
You've got a lot of choices in your life. Yes.
And it has another place for sleeping, which you still have to guess what it is. You've got
a beanbag in the writing room, under the view of an octopus.
No, it's not a beanbag.
A futon. Everyone has a futon.
What's a futon? It's
one of those 90s inventions. It's like a sofa. It's like a really uncomfortable sofa.
No, it's not a futon.
Not a futon. Is it a sofa?
Sort of. It's a kind of sofa.
A chaise longue?
Yes, it's a chaise longue.
Jacob Rees-Mogg style?
Yeah, so you've got now...
10 questions left.
10 questions left to guess the colour of the chaise longue, because I've always wanted a chaise longue in this colour.
So you've got a chaise longue in the loft.
Yes.
This sounds like a weird game of Cluedo, and under the octopus.
I've always wanted a chaise longue in this colour. So it was like a dream to get it.
Silver?
Not silver. And also I can reveal that I ordered it and it had to come from, I suppose, China or somewhere. Mm. And I could track it as it was going all around the earth to come to me. And it got stuck in the Suez Canal that time when that big ship blocked the Suez Canal for ages.
Yes, of course. It tried to do a 3-point turn in the Suez Canal.
I don't think it was on that ship, but it got stuck behind it for several months. You could see it getting stuck behind it.
Can you imagine if local news had come and started asking people, how have you been affected by the Suez Canal? And they'd just stumbled upon you.
Yes.
Oh, my chaise longue is
And
stuck.
It's a nice chaise longue. It's got that like curly bit at the top and curly.
Oh, no. Yeah. I love a CL. Gold.
No.
Yellow.
No.
Orange.
Correct.
Orange.
You still had 6 questions left.
Ah! On the orange chaise longue.
Yes.
In the octopus-themed loft.
With my blue blanket.
Blue boiler suit on as well?
No, I'd just be in my pyjamas then, wouldn't I? I wouldn't wear my boiler suit in bed.
Are you a PJs guy? Full-on PJs?
Yeah, pyjama. When I get into the house, I like to have all my elasticated trousers and all just casual house clothing.
Yeah. So when you sit down, you've got a lot of choices in your life. You can choose to write on one of your 3 desks. You can choose to sleep in one of your 4 sleeping spots. There's a lot of different choices. Do you struggle with that, or do you just go, are you very kind of like, this is what I'm going to do now. I'm going to go and sit up here at my desk, and I know this is the right thing to do.
Well, I like to move around.
Yes. You
know? And for example, on my the dining table, which can be extended big for people who come, or small.
Oh, lovely.
And then I've got 4 chairs. And so I always swap round. So I never want one particular chair facing one particular direction to be, I don't want to get used to it.
You don't want Paul's chair.
I don't want it to be Paul's chair.
No one wants that.
And so therefore that's I so swap true. Round.
Yeah.
So, oh, I always used to sit that way facing the window. Now I sit the other way,
yeah.
In always changing it. And the same with, like, you know, I like to sit in all the furniture in the house.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes I think, well, I haven't sat in that chair for ages. I must sit on that chair now.
And this brings you joy?
Yes.
You live a very happy life doing this, right?
Yes. One of the things I do the least, probably, is sitting on my sofa. I hardly ever sit on my sofa.
Right, right.
It's more for guests when they sit there. I sometimes lie on the sofa.
Well, it's a nap we know from earlier on. It's a snooze spot.
It's a snooze spot. But sometimes I sit on it. Yeah. I don't have a television in my house.
You don't have a TV?
No.
But I would say that's become less weird these days because we've all got TVs in our pockets and on our watches or whatever.
That's true.
Do you watch TV at all then, on your computer?
No, I don't watch it, no.
Do you watch movies or box sets or anything?
Sometimes I watch Netflix.
Mm. On a laptop?
On the laptop.
Yeah.
I didn't used to. I only used to watch things on YouTube.
Take me... Right, OK.
I only ever watched something when I'm eating.
OK.
So only when I'm eating. I was like, when I'm eating, I just like to have something on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And the rest, then it goes off after that.
What do you do then?
Listen to music.
Yeah, but... But what? Okay, but then what kind of music?
Well, mostly classical and mostly the choral music of J.S. Bach.
Oh, wow.
Mostly in the BWV1 to BWV249 range.
Yeah.
That's my main thing.
I would have guessed that. And that was going to be my next guess.
A rare collection of recordings of those pieces.
Vinyl?
Some vinyl and some rare and like on CD, like... I went on a specialist. This is going back to online orders.
Good, because that is the theme of the show.
A special thing. And I wanted to order BWV 197 with Nicholas Harnoncourt conducting in 1967. Yeah. And it was so rare that it was over £1,000 on Amazon. But luckily, I managed to find someone who sold it to me for only £14.99. And then I bought that. And then... I saw it come up again, and I thought it's so rare, so I bought a second one on £14.99. And the reason for that was that I thought, if I ever were to purchase a second home in Singapore, which is unlikely,
but
if I were, then I would at least have that music in both houses.
So you've got a spare?
Got a spare.
For when you get a second home?
Yes.
So there's a chance that you're going to get a second home one day?
Yes.
And the only thing in it? Will be
BWV 197.
Patreon.com/toasterpod. You're listening to the best of My Mate Bought a Toaster Series 8. Still to come, we are going to be going back to the Emmanuel Sanubi episode, which was fascinating and very funny and hair-raising. Especially the moment when he nearly died. Not in the interview. He was absolutely fine during the interview. Thank goodness, because I don't really have any indemnity insurance. But in the past, he had nearly died. And one item led to this whole story unfolding. Sometimes guests come on who maybe aren't superstars just yet, but are incredibly funny. And things unfold without even an item being mentioned. This series, my favourite for that, and there are loads of good episodes of the series. John Kearns was brilliant. The wonderful Ravneet Gill was amazing talking about Celebrity MasterChef. But the person who just sat down and just talked and just unfolded their truth, if that is a sentence that should exist, it does now, was the amazing Katie Norris. She is going to Edinburgh this year. If you are going to the Edinburgh Festival, give her a Google at once and make sure you go and see her. She's going to be a superstar. And this is just the first 10 minutes of that episode. This is Katie Norris on My Mate Bought a Toaster. Hello, welcome back to My Mate Bought a Toaster. My guest this week is the comedian Katie Norris. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
There was just a sort of little nod before you said that.
Yeah.
As if to say, yeah, it's me.
It's me. I'm good. I have sweaty palms.
Well, now, look, you've done podcasts before.
Loads.
Loads of podcasts.
Yeah.
Some of them good.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You know the drill?
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to talk?
Great.
And it just so happens that I've got a tablet here with your Amazon.
Okay.
That's just like a side thing.
How quickly do we have to get to the vulnerable stuff?
Like, really quickly. It really hooks people in.
Well, my dad died 3 years ago.
Oh, God, this is good stuff. Oh, is that,
I'm not sure if I'm gay.
Oh, this is just great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Quick, guys, check the metrics. Oh, we're spiking. We're spiking.
Yeah.
Hang on, are those last two facts true? Because this is
I'm exploring my bisexual side.
Okay, okay.
But during a period of celibacy.
Is this going to be apparent via your Amazon purchase history? Because I can just put this tablet away and we'll just dive into it.
There might
that.
Be connections to be made, but no, probably not.
Okay, well, let's find out. Let's do it. Okay. So I'm going to dive back in, right? We're going to go into the past and I'm going to find your first ever order.
Imagine if I'd lied about my dad being dead. That's so weird.
That would be an indication of really big problems.
Yeah.
Really big problems.
Yeah.
I feel like there was a kid at school who did that.
Oh.
Yeah, it feels like a memory. It might have been me. That might have been what happened.
I'm trying to like distract you from actually looking through the...
Yeah, no, don't worry. We'll get there. We'll get there. So we're going back to 2013.
Oh, wow. I was 23.
Oh, wow. Imagine.
I was 23.
Little Katie, not yet fully grown.
Oh, no, I wasn't little.
Go on.
No, I mean, I look like I do now. I've always looked really mature. Like, I've always I'm an early developer.
Okay.
So, like, even when I was, like, 13, I looked 34.
Did everyone use you to buy booze and fags?
Yeah, and I was clubbing at, like, 14.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. I've always been 5'6", pretty much, since I was 11.
Wow.
And that's my height now.
What a growth spurt. What happened at 10 years old that made you grow?
Just start my period.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Okay, cut there, guys. Jeez, God, I don't know how to...
I started my period at primary school.
That's incredibly young.
Yeah, I was 10 and I didn't even know what had happened. I didn't know what it was.
You had the full-on what on earth is going on?
Yeah, I remember being at the top of the stairs and screaming for my mum. I was like, oh, my God, what the...
What the... you can swear on this.
Yeah.
But I wonder if... Did you say fuck it at 10 years old? Would you?
Well, I probably sort of...
Flip?
Yeah, flip. What the flip? What the flip?
Where did you go to school?
I went to school on a... I went to like a... It wasn't a Steiner school, but it was a similar vibe.
Weird.
Yeah, it was on Exmoor in the middle of nowhere. It was called Lydiat St. Lawrence. I remember my teacher, Mrs. Fursden, had those sort of hippie sandals. Yeah. We had like a garden with a pond and there was lots of just like leaf collecting.
Great.
And then singing.
Right. So you learned to be a gardeners. And
yeah, and sort of weird, sort of hippie children.
On Exmoor,
that's where I grew up, yeah.
Very Heathcliff-y, sort of.
It was.
Do you know what I mean?
But the winters were harsh.
Oh, I love it.
Lots of weird people at the window.
Very gothic. We've gone from you screaming at your first period at 10 years old, and there's like...
Isn't it?
It's quite, you know.
Yeah.
It was quite
visceral.
Yeah. So, God, so you're screaming, what the fuck's going on? And then within a couple of years of that, you're clubbing. That's the 10 to 14 years.
It was
in a nutshell.
I remember it being very quick that I don't even remember sort of being feeling like, but you know, you're at 14, you are still a child, but I think I looked like a young woman.
Wow.
Yeah. And I also remember that like at school, my friends that I made, they also looked like they were early developers. So we also sort of subconsciously found each other.
So you hung around in like the bra club.
We all would walk around with our bra sizes written on our hands. Because at a young age, you're taught that boobs are desirable because the boys are like, you've got boobs. And so we used to write our bra sizes on our hands. And then on a Saturday morning, we would go to Taunton and we would go to Debenhams and we'd get our bras fitted.
Right.
And then we would come out of the changing room and go, I'm a 34C. And then Sarah McDiamond would come out and go, I'm a 34D. And then if you're a B, you would cry.
Oh my God. Competitive tits.
Competitive tits.
And is this have you discovered this is a common thing with girls? Does this happen a lot?
It's like it's the
we didn't do it as boys. It's not like we would go and get. It's a shame, really. Boys, we should have our pants fitted, and then we'd have to measure. Do you know what I mean? That might make us on a more even playing field.
But didn't you have that in like the showers after rugby and stuff?
No. But well done for spotting that. I inevitably did rugby, not football.
Am I right?
Yeah, of course. Hated it. Absolute coward. Used to hide.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because of the size.
Because of the size. The lack of hair. No, it never really bothered me in that way. Weirdly.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a guy who I've seen a few times naked at the gym who's got an absolute, proper leg of lamb with a hole in the end.
Really?
And it is distracting. That's the first time in my life where I've gone, I do not have one of those.
Yeah, I mean, I've recently got into Reddit and like been reading a lot about...
dicks.
Yeah, a lot of the headlines are, my boyfriend's too big and it's painful, or like, I'm hurting my girlfriend, I don't know what to do. So you never really hear about that.
Wow, the large dick community. So we've gone from competitive tits to the large dick community.
So
we haven't even talked about your first purchase.
Oh, God. Here we go.
God, this is going to be a good episode. God, this is going to be good. Don't scrunch up your face. This is going to be great.
Okay, but first purchase.
First purchase, you bought Dracula.
Oh, yeah.
Gothic.
I bought Dracula.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's on brand.
I was in Dracula. I did a play.
Uh-huh. Acting.
Yes.
Professionally at this stage, at 23? Yes.
Well, I must have just turned 24.
Okay.
Yeah, one of my first jobs was I was in Rep in the Lake District, Theatre by the Lake.
Nice.
I was in Comedy of Errors.
This is very idyllic.
Dracula.
We've had schooling on a moor. We've had our first job in the Lake District. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I'm much happier in the countryside.
Mm.
Yeah. I think I'd like to live back out there.
Where do you live now then?
Fucking Acton.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I know. So I live in my brother's flat for cheap rent.
Thanks, bro. Is he there as well?
No, he's a 10-minute walk away.
Oh, fine.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a great flat, but the location, not really.
Did you have to negotiate some sort of sister discount?
Yes.
When you got the flat? How was that conversation? How did that go?
It was just, well, they're much older than me, my brothers, so, and I'm young, and it's not even a conversation.
Yeah.
It's just, you will give me cheap rent.
It's going to happen. And it happens. Yeah. Okay, so... To the similar grand vibes here. My I have two older brothers who are 8 and 10 years older than me.
Okay. Beat that.
What, go on. What are your numbers?
So I'm 30.
Can you write the numbers down?
I was 24
down,
then.
Can you?
No, get a grip.
You are on this point in the plot. Can you write down the numbers of your brothers on your hand? Just to...
What, like my bra size? Yeah,
so how much older are your brothers than you?
So I'm 34. My eldest brother's 58. And then Tim, I think, is 52, okay. 53. And then I have another brother who's only about 15 months older than me.
Okay, so quite similar there, but big gaps. That makes you ultra, it can make you ultra infantilized because it's like you've got a series of dads. That's how I felt. I had a lot of dads. One of them, the actual one, snuffed it, but then I had two spares ready to go. That's
interesting, yeah, because you're always the younger...
Totally.
Brother.
And so that thing, it's really interesting what you said, the thing about the flat negotiations. It's exactly what I do. If my brother, anything financial, I'll just go, you're going to do it. I don't care.
Well, they know what they're doing. It's like, I was on that spoke at dad's funeral. They didn't.
Really?
Yeah. But that's fine. You know, it's my job, darling.
Was it a good
best gig? Yeah. I got perved on loads at my dad's funeral.
What?
By the men that put my dad in the grave.
Right.
This guy was like,
oh my God, you got winked at your dad's funeral.
Yeah, and I gave him a blazer. No, I didn't. There were no blazers. I was actually I got really drunk. I'm sick in a drain.
It's the only thing.
Grief, eh?
It's the only thing to do. It's the only thing to do at the funeral. Fuck.
Yeah.
So, doing the gig at your dad's funeral.
Yeah.
Was there a like, look at me now?
What
did you do? Did you, hang on, was this a thing you wrote or did you like do?
I always knew I was going to because he was ill for a while. And also I'm very much like my dad, like he was like a actor.
Mm.
And so I just always knew that there would be, if anyone was going to speak at dad's funeral, it would have to be me.
Yeah, okay.
So I was already kind of writing it. Like,
why? While he was well. What are you working on, darling? Nothing.
Manifestation. I mean, obviously I don't really remember doing it, but like I remember it feeling like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
It was actually such a beautiful funeral. It was on Exmoor, at a natural burial site.
Right.
You know, these woodland burial grounds that are like, a lot of people haven't heard of. And you kind of, it has to be environmentally friendly. So it's just really, really beautiful. And everyone was kind of wearing white.
Oh.
And it was like, a really hot sort of beautiful day.
Oh, wow.
So it just kind of felt, and then we had a string quartet. So it's very, again, gothic.
That's beautiful.
But also kind of pagan-y.
Yeah. And then throwing up in a drain at the end.
Yeah, and which is classic me, actually.
How many stories end with, then I throw up in a drain?
Yeah, like I always do something really wholesome and then I'm like there, like, yeah.
I throw up in a drain. I can't believe you got winked at. I'll tell you what, mourners really turn me on. That's extraordinary.
Well, one other thing I'll tell you was that when my dad did die, I had to read about this because I was like so shocked by my own reaction.
Okay.
But I was so horny.
Yeah.
Like in the weeks after he passed away, I had a period of numbness. Mm. And then I was like masturbating like 8 times a day.
Holy Christ.
Yeah, because, and apparently it's like, it's a way in which you're trying to self-soothe, your body's trying to feel something again.
Yeah.
And so it goes into this like hyper, it might not necessarily manifest itself with sexual desire.
So it could be like food or drink.
Yeah, anything excessive that feel, God. And maybe I was trying to do that, something that felt safe because I wasn't pursuing other people.
Right.
It was like purely a self-soothing thing. But I had to Google it and it is a thing because I was like, this doesn't feel normal.
Wow.
But then I obviously, and then haven't wanked since 3 years. That's why I'm so creative.
Is that... Oh, hang on, have you given up wanking? Is this...
I am celibate at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah, I am. I'm not dating and I'm not having sex, but I am wanking.
Right, okay.
Yeah, as you'll see on the Amazon purchase history. Oh, God. Which we haven't got round to yet.
Still only done one thing. Still only done one thing, Katie. Ooh, I don't want to hear no more crying. Just come on, let me know what you've been buying. There are so many good bits in that episode with Katie Norris. It's all there right now. Just subscribe to the show and then you can go back and have a look at every single episode. And that one was an absolute favourite. Obviously, there's videos as well. We've got a YouTube channel, youtube.com/@mymatebourghttoaster. And very excited, we are going to be doing some live gigs in September in London Town. There's more details about those live gigs in the show description. Come down and see the show live. It's going to be very funny, I promise, once I've planned it. Okay, last one. This was quite the moment. One random item and a whole life story I will never forget. Emmanuel Sanubi now.
8th of November, $14.99 spent on the Salter Razor bathroom scales. November. That is a bad time to buy bathroom scales as you head into Christmas.
So let's have a look.
Okay.
That's mine.
Okay.
Sure it is mine. Yes, what date was that?
November, 8th of November 2019.
Okay, so I'll tell you why I bought those. let's drag this down.
Oh, yeah.
October 2019, I went through heart failure. So November, I'd just come out of hospital and I had to watch my weight.
Oh, wow.
And I bought those scales.
Well, how did heart failure happen? What happened?
I don't know. Partly genetic, partly lifestyle.
Okay.
And I think I was just burning the candle at both ends for a long time, because at that point I was still working full time.
Right.
But I'd also got really busy at stand-up. Yeah. So I was in the office Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
But then Thursday through Sunday, I would always be on the road.
Late at night as well.
Yes.
Oh,
and it was just, and sometimes during the week, there'd be a gig and then I'd have to go to work in the next morning.
Yeah.
I'd have to drive to Manchester, get back, go to the office.
What job were you doing?
I was working in IT at the time.
Okay.
So I was absolutely everywhere. And this is sort of, festivals are kicking in now.
Oh, it's exhausting.
And when you get to the weekend, you go, I'm going to go out and drink the whole weekend, which you would do.
Mm.
Diet was a mess. Because I'm on the road all the time.
Yeah.
So there was no... And it just sort of all creeped up. And then I was doing a show, and then on stage, all of a sudden, I couldn't breathe. What actually happened, and what we did find out, was I went to the hospital.
Yeah. Where did this happen? Nearby?
This happened in Dubai.
Oh, wow.
But the week before Dubai, I went to the hospital because I just didn't feel right. And me being me, if I go to the hospital, something's wrong. Like, okay. I never go to the hospital.
Yeah.
I was always that guy. If you look at I actually got to see my hospital record, and it's all injuries, never an illness.
Yes.
It's a rugby injury.
Injury is the no choice, go in there. That shouldn't be that shape.
You have to go in there.
That is bone.
But this one, I was like, I'm not okay, and I took myself.
So what were we saying? Were you feeling super tired? What was
What was happening was, every time I was lying down, I couldn't breathe properly.
Gosh.
Which was really weird, because it's so abnormal.
Yeah.
But because I was fine sat up, but the moment I lay down, which if I'd have told them, but I didn't know that was an actual symptom.
So that's a known symptom, is it?
So they would have been able to figure it out. If I'd have told them when I lie down, because it shifts where your body parts are, and it made it much harder for your heart to pump oxygenated blood around the body. So I went to hospital, said I was like, I don't know what's wrong.
Yeah.
I just know I'm not okay. And it was the urgent care unit, and they strapped me up and they gave me all ECG, and everything came back fine. This was the problem.
Hmm.
And she said, the only thing I can see is you've got a throat infection.
Right.
And I was like, okay. And I thought, you know what? She said throat infection. I heard a cold. I thought you'd be fine. You'd get over it. Your body will fight it off.
Yeah.
And then what happened was, the infection spread from my throat to my lungs and my chest. Then it hit my heart.
Oof.
And my heart went, yeah, I'm done.
Cheers, lads. All the best.
Yeah, you lot crowning on about me. I'm going to have a quick nap.
I'm going to knock it on the head in Dubai. So you're on stage. And was it the full-on collapse or...?
No, all of a sudden I just couldn't breathe. But I knew, weirdly enough, I knew I had to finish the show.
The show must go on.
It was like the last
joke.
And I was like, right, let me just get these words out.
Aye, aye, aye.
and let me get off the stage and get back to the hotel. And then that, I couldn't sleep that night. And I flew back to London. I was like, I'm still thinking, chest infection. All right, you're ill. You'll be fine.
Because the healthcare in Dubai is probably great. You should have stayed out there,
I probably should have stayed out
there.
And I'll tell you what was weird. That because I knew it was a throat infection, I got someone to get me some antibiotics. Uh-huh. And these were just like pretty much random antibiotics.
Some penicillin.
Something's going to help. And I'd taken those, I'd taken paracetamol. And even when I told the doctor this, and he was saying, like, you could have literally just dropped, because this is the condition, it's cardiomyopathy. So it's the condition you see where a football player just drops dead.
Right.
So that's what it is.
Okay.
And when the doctor was like, you could have literally just died, I was thinking, I am not famous enough to die that way in a hotel in Dubai off three antibiotics. Yeah. Worst overdose ever.
So at this point, so we've got the bathroom scales. I mean, this is the show in its essence, right? Yeah. One item and we've got a whole story there. That must have been also, at that point, what, you had two kids or one kid?
Two.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
And what did you do? Have you had operations and stuff? Or was it just a case of lifestyle?
Lifestyle. So I didn't, I quit smoking. Mm. That was, used to be a really heavy smoker and I've not had one since. No. So I stopped in Dubai because it physically hurt to smoke.
Yeah, but you can get duty free.
Oh. Well, this is the thing, and they're so cheap out there. Oh. I was furious. And I thought to myself, I was literally thinking when I get home, I'll start smoking again. It'll be fine. And imagine that, it'll be fine. I'll start when I get home. And the thing that freaked me out is the night before we flew home, I started coughing up blood.
Oh, Manuel.
Yeah, and at that point, my head's gone, you've got lung cancer.
Yeah, of course it has. Yeah,
because that's what, and it's like a lot of blood.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So when I'm in the hospital, and I didn't say anything because I was like, I need them to tell me. And I was terrified. So when they came in and they were like, it's heart failure, I was like, yes!
High-fiving them.
Yeah. I was like, everyone, high-five all around. And the way this doctor and the nurse looked at me, like, is there something really wrong? I was like, and I told them what was going on. They're like, all right, fair enough. And they checked. They was like, no, there's no signs of anything like that.
And how old were you at this point?
2019, I was, what, 38? All so right. Very young for it.
Yeah, very young for it. I had a big health scare when I hit 40. I had a skin cancer scare. And it happened during lockdown. It changes a lot. I mean, yours is much more dramatic than mine. But it is a proper, it's almost like a half-time whistle.
Yeah. It changed how I think about everything. And I suddenly realised a lot of the things that I thought mattered don't. I was like, once you seem worse, and even changed my comedy because I'm a lot more carefree with it. Because before this, ironically enough, my biggest fear was dying on stage until I nearly died on stage. And after that, it became more fun. Because every single gig now was an extra privilege that I get to do that I might not have got to do.
And this is obviously years ago. Does that still happen now? Do you still do gigs in that freewheeling?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, that's, it hasn't changed. It changes like how you write, because now you're a lot more honest with your write. You've got something that you really want to share.
Yeah.
So I don't make stuff up. All the stuff I talk about has happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's so good. A lot of people say a near-death experience, very good for you.
Oh, it's great.
If only we could sort of manufacture them.
So this is the thing. So 2019, so I was writing my Edinburgh, my Edinburgh show at that point.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, I'd written about 40 minutes worth and I got real writer's block. I couldn't think of anything. And then this happened. And I was like, get in. And that gave me another 10 minutes of writing about this. And then I got stuck at that point. I was like, I need something else to happen. Yeah. And I'd just come out of hospital.
Yeah.
And where I was lying down for so long, when I left hospital, they didn't give me blood dinners. And they had been giving me blood dinners in the hospital.
Oh, we're not looking at clock. It's not clutter clock, is it?
Yeah. So when I came out of hospital,
don't.
I'm sitting there and I'd run out of more stuff to write. And I was like, I need at least another 5. And then I had a stroke. And I was like, get in. There we are. I had a TIA, I had a mini stroke. And then that then made it into the show as well.
So when you've got your Edinburgh show, your family must be absolutely bricking themselves.
Like, is he going to get hit by a car now? Or what's going to happen?
Yeah, I know. Only a comedian can look at a health scare and think, that solves the last 5 minutes of my Edinburgh show. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Thank you to all my fabulous guests who've come on Series 8. All the episodes are available right now if you want to go and check them out on whatever platform you use. Whichever platform it is, whether it is Amazon, whether it is Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please, 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 if you get a moment, give us a nice review, because it'll nudge some new ears in our direction, which is always a lovely thing. Also, we're not just for ears, this show, we're for eyes as well. Go to youtube.com/@mymatebought a toaster and you can watch whole episodes up there. There's new videos going up all of the time. Also, final thing, I promise, we are going to be doing some live gigs in September. We've got a couple of live dates, which I'm very excited about doing in London town. So if you're in that part of the world and you fancy coming and watching someone have their Amazon history gone through, then have a little click on the link, which is in the show description, and you can come down to the Hen and Chickens Theatre in North London and come and watch us do our thing. It's on two Sundays in September. Have a look at that link and you can come down and watch the show live. It's going to be fun and not at all stressful. Okay, that's it. Thank you very much. We'll see you soon. Bye. It's my mate, water toaster. Oh, it's my mate, water.